wrong with, that they evolved to debit cards. So when I came back to Barbados, Jamaica was ahead in using debit card and electronic card transaction from a security standpoint, because nobody could rob you of your money if you have the card in your hand. As well, the whole matter of what Dr. Peter Phillips, who I think is the current leader of the Jamaica Labour Party, the PNP, he was the one that got very hard-nosed and spearheaded the whole initiative of making sure that Jamaica was on the cusp of doing business easier. He single-handedly broke down a lot of the doors and set up think tanks where people in the different spaces could come together, from the gardener back up to whoever is heading that area, and looked at everything that would impede persons from doing business easily in Jamaica. And look at what has happened. I mean, we're happy to say it's a bright shining day in Jamaica. They're now at number 70, moving from way down the totem pole. We need to get serious in Barbados again. There was a time when people in Jamaica themselves would always hire Barbadians to work for them because they thought they had a wonderful work ethic. There was the ethos of Barbados was one of industry and so on. And what's happening now is that people are writing their names on history's page with disappointments great and not with expectations great anymore. We have to flip that story. We have to have expectations great. Set the bar high for Barbadians again, so that we can go after successes. Solutions Barbados is really about putting Barbados back on track. You know, we've had 14 years of one party, 10 years of the other, and some of the same things that we're complaining about are happening in both spaces. Mr. Farley did a great job I must commend, give credit where credit is due, in terms of looking at the systems and processes at the time. But in this particular juncture, at this particular time, Barbados is in crisis mode. I wanted to speak as well to the whole matter of industries. We have conversations about oil, nurses, and making nurses available for international use. He was mentioning about not only seeing private partnerships between government and private local, but private international, because they're private as well. And if our governments can have conversations with international parties that can bring business to Barbados, or in terms of nurses, we have things like remittances. We have our nurses going to different hospitals and this kind of thing. That would bring foreign exchange to Barbados. And so we don't have to, the world is now our oyster. We have to look at best practices and see what works best for us. Everybody is talking about Dubai being a tourism mecca. But what people forget that even though we have all this artificial intelligence and this perfect looking rooms, there are people that are looking for a coconut tree and to drink juice out of a coconut shell, you know? So the point is, what am I saying? I'm saying we have to find out what are people's needs and determine that we will make sure that we are catering to those needs. And I want to give one last point about, for example, the taxation model that we're using, let's say for Sandals Resort and so on. We have a situation where the government of Barbados chose to give a tax break to a single company regarding how they operate in tourism in this particular space. We have dedicated hoteliers in this country that have given their sweat, their brow, raised their kids off the back of tourism and so on, and they have not been given the opportunity to share in this tax breaks that Sandals were offered. Now, when we're talking about doing business and doing ease of doing business, these are some of the things that we have to look at. What are our local people getting out of these systems? Why is it that people are booking tickets, booking hotels in Connecticut and different jurisdictions in the world, leaving the foreign exchange there, coming here and employing people and getting food and so on, but the bulk of that money is being left outside of Barbados? When we are talking about public-private partnerships, we have to talk about how does that money come into our economy? We have to ask ourselves, how does that money get into our economy? We have persons booking tours of Barbados and so on overseas, and the money is not seen here on our shores. So even in terms of the restructuring of how we approach this thing, we have to ask a critical question. Not only are we doing public-private, but is that money coming to our people? Is it coming into our economic space? And this is something Solutions Barbados is intending to do.
Thank you. We are joined by Ms. Kim Tudor from the Democratic Labour Party. Ms. Kim Tudor is the representative for St. Michael North. Yes. And Mr. Colin Jordan wanted to respond, and then we would get Ms. Kim Tudor to share her thoughts. Our discussion today is on public-private sector efficiency and what are we going to do to effectively lead to national development.
I wanted to speak to the idea of a strategic approach to governance. There is a lot of, and this is both public and private sector. The quote you used from Lord Coe at the top of the program is instructive, because both in the public and private sectors, there is a lot of what I call, my teacher parents may be offended by this, but ad hocism. I don't know if that's a word or not.
Neologism.
But I'm going to, so approaches and fixes that are not guided by where we want to get in 10, 15, 25 years. We have to have a strategic approach to our governance, both public and private sector. And by that, I'm going to repeat, I mean the people, the human beings who occupy that space, public and private sector, need to be on board. All of us need to know where we want to get. Because if we're going to get to where, as leaders, we want to take our people, then our people have to be on board. And so the strategic approach has to include involving people in determining where we want to go. And it has to include them in a way that allows for that long-range planning. So the strategic approach has to be there for governance. Bureaucracy was one of the things that was mentioned. In tourism, we determined a few years ago that it took, you had to go through 17 government departments in order to set up a hotel, from idea to opening the doors to receive the first guest. 17 government departments, not 17 ministries, but different departments. Barbados has had a number of rules and regulations and ways of doing business that may have served us well 50, 40, 30 years ago. They may have allowed us to govern, ensuring that no one sector took advantage of another sector, no one group took advantage of another group. But the world has changed, the world has evolved, Barbados is evolving. And so the systems need to reflect the reality. There are many processes, many ways of doing things that have worked in the past that are no longer relevant. Mr. Farley mentioned the guy at the lighthouse. We have lots of those on the statute books in Barbados. Lots of those embedded in how both public and private sector carry out certain functions. And so there has to be a sitting down of people examining what is necessary, what needs to be discarded, because we have to recognize that government, and by government I mean on the public sector side, is set up in some regard to ensure that the vulnerable in society are not taken advantage of. That role must remain. There will be some element of gatekeeping on the part of the public sector, but that has to be to ensure that the vulnerable are not dispossessed, taken advantage of. It is not to become an impediment to legitimate, decent people being able to do business. And that change of mindset cannot happen by policymakers talking at people or issuing pronouncements. There has to be a coming together. People have to sit at the table, and what is needed for the country has to be a discussion, a decision, and then a move to implementation. And the Barbados Labour Party has, we practice the idea of listening to people, whether it's rubbing shoulders or people's assemblies. You have to listen to people. If you want to move people from where they are to some place you think they ought to be, then you have to carry them along with you. And so the Barbados Labour Party will be taking that approach, strategic leadership involving people, listening to people, discussing with people, mutual education. We hear from them, they hear from us, and that is how we will take Barbados forward in an inclusive, democratic way. bring the public and the private sector together.
Thank you. I would hear from our representative for the Democratic Liberal Party, Ms. Kim Tudor.
Good morning, Lisa. I'm really pleased to be here.
There are a couple of things we have on the table. We've been talking about the issue of public-private sector efficiency, and we would just want to, one of the first questions we asked each candidate earlier was, what is that one thing that your party will do to improve public-private sector efficiency? And then the second question was, that other specific thing, what is that one option that we can use? So I'll give you the first question.
Sure. Private public sector efficiency is certainly something that we are committed to. As you would have known, and I think I heard as I was driving here, the whole notion of a social partnership, which was something that was started by the DLP government, and certainly it is something that has served us well and has been a model throughout the world for private public sector partnerships. So obviously it is something that we would wish to continue, and I would say dialogue, but a commitment to achieving certain goals is key by both parties. And I think the first set of dialogue is to agree what those goals are in the interest of Barbados, and then the second thing is the implementation, the commitment to working towards achieving. Once we agree, so we are not at odds, we say this is where we want to go, both private and public, and then our next commitment is to implement and to see that it's done.
There is this, and I took a little bit of licks on a panel quite recently for making this statement, and I make it very boldly. And I can only speak to the last two parties because they're the only two that have held power in Barbados. But we had a lot of work that went into the Barbados National Strategic Plan, which would have come to its conclusion in 2025. And nothing happened when there was a change of office. Nothing happened. All of the work, all of the research that was done by the University of the West Indies, a lot of the ministries that participated towards looking at where Barbados is going. What can we use? What are the targets? Having set the targets, what mechanisms are we going to put in place? And all of this work just came to a screeching halt then when there was a change of office. I'm really genuinely really tired of this politicking when it comes to the movement and the advancement of certain metrics in the country. And there's no excuse really for so much work that has gone on and then for it to just be shelved simply because a new party came into power. There had to have been something that could have been used from the strategic plan. So we heard Mr. Farley mention setting the objectives, how do we get there, you know, the efficiency, etc. And then you also mentioned, Ms. Tudor, setting where you want to go. But when we set where we want to go, and then new persons take on the reins, and they don't agree that that's where we go, I would have thought that we could have had another one, but we don't have any. So how do we get to that particular place if we don't have a strategic plan in place?
Well, first, I was one of the persons who worked on that first strategic plan, so I know the amount of work that has gone into it. There's always a good time to do a strategic plan, and all the times it's not the best time to do a strategic plan. Now, a strategic plan is a certain direction in which you wish to go, and there has to be a commitment to that. Mm-hmm. What you will find in strategic planning, where we teach strategic planning, is that people who weren't a part of that decision making do not have the commitment to carry that current plan to fruition. So therefore, they create a new plan. The new plan that is created does not have to throw out everything that was there before. And I am certain that the current plan does not throw out the things that were there before, because regardless to party, there are certain metrics that we need to be constantly measuring. And I think there is a commitment by both parties to ensuring that we become even more competitive than we are, and that our citizens enjoy economic well-being. So I would imagine that all the strategic plans that are done would have those as some key strategic objectives. The methodology in which you use to get there, the priorities and so forth can change. But I think that the goals remain the same, the well-being of our people here in Barbados. So we may say our focus is tourism. Somebody else may say our focus is health tourism. Our focus may be the green economy. So the methodology and the route and the strategic priorities may change, but I think that the objectives should remain the same, and I'm sure they have remained the same.
I don't think they have. I will let Mr. Wendell Callender make a point because he hasn't spoken.
Okay. I'm amazed at all the plans that we do. I think I was reading somewhere, read over about 17 plans over a short period of time. But then we just throw these plans aside. We research all kinds of things, but then we do nothing about them. We need commitment to implementing these things. But I also want to make a point. We need more cooperation in Barbados. Right now, we need more cooperation between the trade unions, the private sector, and the government. Everything has gone off track in the last few years. Everything has gone off track. There's just chaos. And if we are facing all of these difficulties that we are being downgraded every minute. Just like when we were in threat of devaluation and we decided we had to form the social partnership, we need to recognize now that we need to look at new ways of doing things. And we need to open up the markets, generally speaking. We need to open the markets, even in terms of politics, where we need to look at new entrants into the marketplace and look at the talent that they have. Instead of just saying, as a B, as a D, those days are over. Barbados does not require that at this time. We need to work together. So my thing is, let us work together, whether we in the private sector, the public sector, the trade unions, and the people in the communities, the churches, the CBOs, the NGOs, all this. We need to bring everybody on board.
I think we were talking about the social partnership earlier. Well, one of my disappointments, really, and I agree with Wendell in terms of I didn't come to, I came to speak to Barbados, their party's policies, and not necessarily to bash or to attack, but I can't help really, honestly, but saying that it is a bit disappointing that the party that was in the forefront of developing the social partnership seems not to be using it in the way, or learn it to be used in the way that it was intended to be. The Barbados Labour Party is going to be expanding the social partnership. We believe in dialogue. We believe that in order for a country to progress, there has to be a coming together. This is one Barbados, and we have to sit together at the table. We cannot be, what we find in the public space sometimes and in the private space, the whole matter of ego, defensive reaction, we have to get past that. We are maturing as a democracy, and we have to get to the point where we can sit together, discuss, and come up with the ideas for effective and efficient policy making and execution.
When we come back, we're going to look at how the public, the private sector, and all civil society will work together to bring Barbados into becoming more efficient. Thank you. This is People's Parliament. We are on Down to Brass Tacks. I would hear from Kim Tudor before we go to the next phone call.
Earlier, we mentioned that there were several plans and that seemed to indicate some level of chaos. I would like to say that several plans does not indicate any level of chaos. What happens is that the planning horizon for strategic planning has changed. In the past, we would plan for 15 years, 20 years, your 5-year plan. However, the environment is very dynamic. If you are, for example, in telecommunications, your strategic horizon is much shorter than somebody in maybe even utilities. And at one time, utilities also are changing because it was a more sedentary kind of industry. So what we are seeing is that the dynamics of the environment, both local and global, are changing so rapidly that you have to be adjusting to that environment. It does not mean that your overall goal is not the same. It is. But the route in getting there will have to vary a little bit. It's almost like a roadblock. You have to get around it. You have to get around it. Mm-hmm. So having several plans is really more of a reflection of the dynamism in the industry and how it is changing rapidly rather than any indication of chaos or not know where you're going or where you wanted to do.
But his has more to do, yes, implementation. And not just that, and I take your point clearly in terms of the different sectors and the time spans, etc. But my original discussion was more on the national strategic plan. There's only going to be one, and it's going to have a specific time span, and it's going to speak to all of the varying industries and sectors for which the country participates. But I'll go to the next caller. This is Dr. Brastatz. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I was holding Reginald Farrell here, making a further comment.
Oh, you were holding. I am so sorry. We were not aware. I'm sure you heard the responses and reaction from the audience.
Yes. Interesting. I want to support the points made in relation to implementation, because you're quite right. The number of areas in which, whether it be at a national level or sectoral level, where the number of studies, recommendations, I think that in the context of what we need to do, we need to pick a few of the low-hanging fruit and implement.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we have the most recently Barbados Sustainable Recovery Plan. And I'm pleased to say that one of the recommendations coming from the private sector has been accepted as of having an oversight committee. And I trust that that will get up and going pretty soon. But on the question of implementation, we need to avoid two grave diseases, analysis paralysis and implementation deficit disorder. And I think that as Barbadians, we are good people. We are prone towards perfection. And in every one of us, school child, cricketer, government official, private sector people, we want to make sure we get things right. And sometimes we take a bit long in getting things right. I believe that if we were to follow the simple maxim, the plan, act, check, repeat approach, we will implement. If when we review and it's not quite right, we change it and we're rolling forward. But we do have to pick some things and implement them. The other observation is that we need to set firm targets. I found that with a number of plans that I've seen, they're so general that they are guaranteed to be correct. But coming on the limb to say our target is that at the end of 2018 we will achieve this. That tends not to be a typical feature of plans that we see coming up sometimes from state-owned enterprises and so on. That's what we want to see. And in fact, the annual report coming out of state-owned enterprises, statutory boards and so on, should really be identifying not just the financials and general thing about what they did, but what were the targets for the year, what were the activities, what were the results, so that you are having that performance-driven focus and performance not happenstance. This is what the targets were, and this is what we were actually able to achieve. You, when you were going to the break, you raised the question about what will civil society do and how can civil society work with the government to make some improvements. ICAV, as a civil society organization, we have not stood idly by. We are not prone to criticism for its own sake. We actually work with government in a number of areas to make things better. For example, on Monday the 26th, we had a public sector accounting conference, free for public officers, and that was on public financial management reforms, which are critical. There have been a number of them over the years, and there will continue to be a number of them. We've implemented new accounting standards in Barbados going back 10 years now. But there needs to be continuous improvement in the way that we do the public financial management. So we were able to work with CPA Canada to bring in a number of international speakers. We had regional speakers from CariCard. We had local speakers. But getting our high-level accounting folks to look towards the next round of public financial management reforms and how they can use public financial management reforms to improve efficiency, and transparency, accountability, and all of those goals.
The second question, thing that question for you before you go to your second thing. If you were to be advising government at this time, and I heard you say you're not running for that office, but if you were honestly taking the seat of ICAB and bringing some value to any of these political parties represented here, if they were to assume office, what would be your first order of business to assist them to bring some well-needed change as it relates to the public-private sector efficiency, given the work that you have been working in and the role that you're playing right now? How would you advise either political party?
Well, I would say that the two major tasks facing any government right now would be economic stabilization and taking the measures towards economic growth. And the thing is, we all know what those are. The things to implement them.
Bear in mind, we're not dealing specifically with economic stabilization today. We know that that is a critical issue, and that will feed into any form of public-private sector efficiency.
Yes.
But I want you to specifically address our topic of public-private sector efficiency. You have just assumed office. You are now given the position of advisor, and you have been tasked with identifying the low-hanging fruit or the very critical issues that this government can move the country forward from the perspective of improving efficiency.
That's right. And I was setting the context because within the things to drive economic growth, then will be your public sector efficiency measures. Because things are out there hanging on their own. And within that matter of public sector efficiency, first of all, I will deal with effectiveness first. What services does the government desire to provide? And that's a political judgment. Then we decide what services we're going to provide. Then at what cost? You have your budget constraint. Are you going to spend within your budget? Are you going to raise taxes? Are you going to trim the cost? And then what structures are most efficient and effective in providing those services? Central government ministries, state-owned enterprises, or privatization? Does government have to do the service itself in order for it to be done? Mm-hmm. There's some services that are amenable to that, and others may not be. So I'm not going to leave out the question of goals, targets, and policies in terms of the effectiveness and performance dimension and go straight to the efficiency. But on efficiency, the single thing that I would say, my single measure, would be to use technology to drive efficiency and to reduce costs and to improve the results for the citizens. At the start of my comments earlier, I mentioned the online filing of taxes. Like I said, I know that the refunds aren't coming through, but that's a separate matter. But we're a small country, Lisa. We should be able, for example, everybody has a smartphone or two. It's probably on average two smartphones or other personal digital devices per person in Barbados. But yet, you can't get simple information. Every government department should, as a matter of its policy, look to see what of its services, information or otherwise, can be delivered digitally. So the transport board, for example, you're standing by the side of the road waiting for a transport board, or ZR for that matter, in this small place. Why should you not, as they do in some cities in the world, be able to check your phone app, your bus app, to see what time the next bus is coming by, to see if there's a delay because the bus is broken down, there's an accident somewhere, and that is posted there. In terms of and we could go on with several examples along those lines of how we can use digital. Why shouldn't you be able to make basic renewals online? I know that government says they don't want to pay the 2.5 or 3% fee to the banks for use of credit cards. But my thing is, increase the overall fee or charge for the service by that amount and let me be able to sit in my bedroom in my jockey shorts and pay my taxes, pay those things which I need to pay.
But or negotiate with the bank to bring down the fee. I don't think that you should just accept the price because...
Yeah, exactly. But citizens are demanding these opportunities, especially the millennials. My children, 31 and 28, they're not used to standing in lines like we did many years ago and thought nothing and chit-chat with people in the line and have a grand old time. But we lose a lot of national productive time because we're not utilizing technology to its maximum effect. As I mentioned earlier, the simple matter of certainty of process. For a small business, for an individual doing something for the first time, what is the real information? When you go on some government websites, they have not been updated. Last information is 2014 or 2009 or whatever. And if I need to go to the Ministry of Agriculture to do something, I should know what the steps are. And in fact, I'll pause on this one. The Ministry of Agriculture has a fantastic library. If you go up there, you can get information on how to build a greenhouse, different planting techniques, and so on. But that information isn't fully reflected in the ministry's website. So a farmer who has to watch out for some crop thieves, some stray sheep and cows that may eat his crops, as well as tend to those crops, has to go down to the ministry to get information. So I hope I'm getting the point across.
I'm going to ask you to just get to the second element of it. I interjected, but I had to do that deliberately to keep us on track.
Right. And the second one I was making on the civil society one was in terms of what ICAB is doing. We think that the things that get rewarded get done. And yes, we beat up on the government departments for not filing the statements in time and so on as well. We should. But we have announced that this year we will be having public sector financial awards to recognize those agencies that do their audits on time, they file their financial statements and annual reports on time as required by the different bits of legislation that govern them. And as those awards evolve over time, we will also be looking at getting recommendations from public and people in public sector to recognize individuals and departments for financial innovation, for bringing in efficiencies, because we want to create a virtuous circle. Because one of the challenges that some of the public sector folks have faced is that they always hear the criticism. They never hear the compliments or areas in which people are willing to assist. So as a civil society organization, we have taken the decision that we will do some positive things to effect improvements and have dialogue and not just talk at or talk about work in the public sector. And the third point, as far as immediate things, I think the social partnership, as mentioned before, social partnership needs to be reinvigorated. This is a wonderful tool. And all of these reforms that we need to take in terms of what services we offer as a government and what we do, how do we do them, and how can we create a change culture in Barbados. The major players are there in the social partnership, and we need to have that discussion. But my perspective of the social partnership is that it has kind of unwittingly become its own institution, and you have the meetings and so on, fine, very useful. But what is really needed is for that ethos, that tripartite approach, to be reflected in how government departments do their business every day. Okay. If that is done at sanitation, at water authority, IDC, in the Ministry of Health, all over, in every little, in the animal control unit, vector control unit, then you will have less industrial relations challenges. You will have less of what Kim wearing her other hat as nice identified as employee disengagement and some of the other challenges. You will have more of engagement with the customers, the clients out there. So the social partnership is can be the underpinning of the discussion, which will help us to get to the decision. And when that decision is made, we implement without the hiccups. So change management can be done through the social partnership. And in this environment where we need rapid transformation of our public service and our private sector, that I think is going to be a key and very, very useful positive element.
Okay. I thank you so much for your intervention. We were not aware that you were holding in that second element. So thanks again, Mr. Reginald Farley from ICAB. I'm going to open the floor to those members of Parliament who are here with us to share with us their thoughts. Just to be complete, Mr. Gibson.
Yes, Reginald, Paul Gibson, Solutions Barbados. I am so happy to hear some of the some of the thoughts you shared earlier, because you must have been reading our manifesto online at solutionsbarbados.com. If you visit our new site at solutionsbarbados.com, a lot of the things you spoke to in terms of having a vision, in terms of our ISO 9001 quality management system that we always talk about, because a lot of the things that you spoke to were directly related to measurement and to productivity and efficiency and execution. One of the things that we are constantly finding is that when you look at the Estonian government, they have done exactly what you said regarding the automation of bill payment systems and so on. I mean, it makes life easy. lines disappear. So one of the things that the ISO 9001 plan that Solutions Barbados is pushing, when we assume office, one of the things we would be certainly doing is making sure that we automate all of our payment services across the nation. And as you said, you stay home in your boxers and you pay your bills. We would negotiate with banks, of course, for a low rate for the whole thing of getting better costs to us. But this is something that would bring in more funds into the coffers. When people stand long in lines, they sometimes go back to work because they have a short lunch hour. You mentioned plan, act, check, and do. Yeah. Now, this is something that, again, and then you mentioned after that, continuous improvement. This is one of the elements of the ISO 9001 quality management system. Not only do you plan, check, act, and do, but you also look at continuous improvement. How can I even make this better? So you go to the licensing authority, you stand in line, and you create a line just for renewing permits. You create a line just for doing licenses of vehicles, and you look at efficient ways of doing things. Now, this particular program is about public and private partnerships, and I wanted to make sure that we don't forget that part of that is understanding what needs to be done. One of the things that needs to be done is that we need to identify industries like oil, animation, building of banking apps, and all these things as private-public partnerships. We have a lot of young people listening to this program today, and a lot of them are saying, I need a job. A lot of my people in Culloden Road and so on are looking for jobs. And this is one of the ways that we can bring the private landscape to the public landscape to ensure that we at least have plans and a structured way of looking at jobs and looking at government facilitating those jobs. We as a party, for example, are looking at having a lot more persons do their own business. And we will be using the post offices to set up banks. We're not going to build a lot of brick and mortar again to make sure that people get loans. If you have started a business and it's going well, those are the people we want you to come in, sit down with us and say, as a party, as a Solutions Barbados party, we're going to say, here is money to help you advance that business even further. And then with the objective of going international, not just national. We have the institutions like BIDC and so on, which I've sat on that board before. A great group of people, very knowledgeable, but they're always trade shows. And what we found is that the same people come back and get funds over and over and over and over. And so the BIDC business development officers are there waiting. And so even in terms of how do we reach to those young people that are artists, that are mathematicians and scientists, how do we get them into the space where they can take their discoveries, their 3D printers or whatever else, to the rest of the world or other innovations? You probably may know that the World Wide Web was partly developed by a Barbadian. I think everybody at this table knows that. Mm-hmm. We have that. I mean, this is one of the greatest and most revolutionary inventions. Arizona, he says. poor fellow. But, the point is that we have innovators in this country, whether in the space of agriculture, whether in the space of pharmaceuticals. I particularly am very keen on the benefits that can be derived from the cannabinoid oils of marijuana. And I'm not talking about a crocus bag in a corner with marijuana sticking up. I'm talking about lab coats and goggles and spectrometry machines and chromatography machines to make sure that the tannins and the cannabinoid oils and so on are extracted and that people could benefit tremendously, whether epileptics or have bad eczemas and these kind of things. So there's money to be made. We can monetize a lot of these apps and inventions, but I do believe that the private sector of Barbados has let Barbados down. And I'm saying this publicly because sometimes what happens is this. We could look at filling our pockets and having our black cards or our platinum cards and so on. That's one place. But you must look at national development. It cannot be always about you, your child, and so on. Sometimes there is a larger national purpose that we must look at. And so when you're making money as a company, consider investing and giving some of that money back to research, employment, and drilling it back into the economy. And this is one of the things that has wrecked our culture for a long time. You will see people with 5 or 6 BMWs in their driveway, and they probably don't drive one every 6 months or whatever, but they never think of how can I put back into my company, my country. And so we have to become more nationalistic. We have to become more focused. We have to have vision. And this is something that Solutions Barbados wants to make sure that all of our systems, our process, are aligned with our ISO 9001.
Okay, I want to hear from Colin on the role the private sector will play in this whole equation, from the public-private sector efficiency goal.
Private sector has a significant role to play. I would have indicated earlier that I see the public sector in terms of government as protecting the vulnerable, facilitating growth, facilitating development, making sure that we have a well-ordered society, not necessarily to be doing everything, but making sure that all goes according to plan, nobody falls behind, people are not oppressed, not maintaining a well-ordered society. That is the fundamental role of a government and allowing for the country's development. One way the Barbados Labour Party understands it will not work is by criticizing the various sectors. So we're not going to criticize the public sector or the private sector. What we recognize is that we all need to be working together to achieve the outcome that we want. And so the private sector has to be brought on board. There are deficiencies in all sectors, and we'll be sitting with the private sector so that we share with them what the vision is. We explain to the players in the private sector what is expected of them. We're going to talk about it. There are going to be issues that they're going to raise. For example, and we hear this from time to time, use of technology. We have discussed that quite a bit just now. One of the bugbears of the private sector is that we are not able to use, we meaning the as a country, not able to use technology to its fullest extent. Because there is the issue of time being money. And I think Mr. Farley spoke to it, you know, having somebody run around standing lanes and all that kind of stuff. There are efficiencies that the private sector will want to see. The private sector has to understand where the country is going. It also has to understand that there are certain safeguards that have to be in place. And I think that there has to be that education that says to private sector and public sector that we want the same goals. We are really aiming toward the same thing. The private sector, based on our discussions with them, want to be assured that unnecessary impediments are not being placed in their way. They want to be assured that the public sector is not seeing them as mercenaries. And sometimes the public sector does. Sometimes the public sector may be justified in seeing them that way. And that is the reason why the discussion has to happen. We need the private sector to understand that private enterprise, individual people coming up with ideas and implementing those ideas, is what drives economic growth and development. So they have a personal, a business, but also a national responsibility. The growth in countries is driven by small businesses. Small businesses owned by one or two persons are part of the private sector, not just large conglomerates. So that the focus then on entrepreneurship and how do we get people to understand what entrepreneurship is all about, what their responsibilities are as entrepreneurs to themselves, because people go into business because they want to earn a living. If you want to be philanthropic, then you set up a charity and you do your philanthropy. People go into business to earn a living. So profit is not a bad word.
Maximize but, profit.
Well, I don't like to necessarily use the word maximize profit, but profit, making a profit, is something.
So sloppily getting profit? No, it is, sorry? Maximize profit, not sloppily getting profit. There's nothing wrong with that.
Correct. No,
it's an economic term, and it is an accurate thing. It does not mean anything evil.
I understand. My first degree is in economics, right? I understand that. What I'm saying from a, I'm speaking to Barbadians generally this morning, and I'm saying to all of us that profit making is not a bad thing.
It's not.
The reason why I didn't use the term maximizing is because maximizing the term, not the reality, but the term, sometimes carries connotations that regardless of what I have to do, I will do. So I'm saying earning a profit, but within the context of understanding that we have a responsibility that goes beyond ourselves. It goes beyond our families. Mm-hmm. Or it extends to our society. And in a globalized world, it really extends to the world. So allowing business people, whether they're conglomerates or individuals or families who are involved in business, to understand their role as developers of a society is going to be important. That has to happen if business people, large or small, are to recognize their function in the development of a society. And I think when that happens, it may be easier, I think it will be easier for them to understand that they have these certain safeguards, and that the public sector, the regulatory agencies, will have to ensure that things, let's use a nebulous term, things are done in a way that does not negatively impact, or that do not negatively impact on other more vulnerable or other vulnerable sectors of a society. And I think when people realize that we are working toward the same goal, then it becomes easier to do what needs to be done within the parameters that are set, because we have sat, we have discussed them, we have not spoken at people, but we have discussed and we have brought people on board, and we move forward toward national development. But I guess at some point later, I'll come back to the whole idea of entrepreneurship and what needs to happen in the public-private sector space to make sure that that becomes an effective tool of development.
Thank you so much, Mr. Callender.
Yes, I think it would be remiss of me if I didn't focus on industry. Actually, I'm representing an area where industry is paramount, St. James Central. That would include places like Old Town, where you would have golf, where you would have people involved in business, where you would have little farmers, fishermen, and all that. So I'm not going to criticize any one particular sector. I've also sat with the people in tourism and manufacturing, social partnership, and all that. But I'm concerned about the role of the agencies like the Productivity Council. It was once the National Productivity Council, but for some reason they took off the national. And I think at this time, there needs to be a National Productivity Council to make it all embracing. As a matter of fact, we of the UPP are going to look at the role of the various agencies to make sure that they are still relevant in 2018. That has to be done. And I want to make the point that we believe that every little boy and girl should have a dream of owning a business, especially where you can do a business in your house. Just as Al Barr had a dream that people should have free education, we have a dream that every little boy and girl should not grow up feeling that he or she has to work for somebody, but can work for himself or herself. Especially now, we don't need to have all that infrastructure. We don't need to have all that capital. So a boy can go up with a dream of being his own person because he can use the information technology to in the new economy and in the creative industry to provide the skills and the services that people in the world need. So we think that we need to focus on the cultural industries. I mean, we've been talking about that since the 1990s. There was this plan to have cultural industries bill. It was only promulgated in 2013. It took all those years. But anyway, we believe that people who are into music, film, video, doing new forms of technology on computers, and they can have their own businesses in the house. When I work as a freelancer for the nation, I can do work in Barbados in communities, travel to a country in the Caribbean, submit my material from wherever I was for 2 weeks, and I have to have my photographs sent as well. So what I'm saying is that Barbados has changed. We're not into sugar cane and all that anymore. We are into new technologies. We are into a new economy, so we have to respond to that. So we need to make a fundamental change, a real change. And we in the UPP believe that we are capable. We know that we are capable of leading that charge and that new change.
Okay, thank you so much. We will go on to Ms. Kim Tudor shortly, but this is Dr. Brass Stats.